first step that kills you. It's the landing. And for the Democrats, it won't be the first 100 hours, but the next 60 days that tell the tale. Despite the comity of a White House photo op, the Bush administration will finish its days of dominance with a flurry of retrogressive initiatives, like installing the unconfirmed U.N. Ambassador John Bolton, where he can continue his dismembering of that troublesome body called the United Nations. President Bush has already called for still more counter-constitutional legislation, while violating its provisions through selective signing statements that deny the express will of Congress, as if the elimination of habeas corpus, posse comitatus, and state sovereignty over the National Guard were not enough, or the $2 trillion war and security debt that will come due over the next few years. And yet, the absolute and essential repeal of these laws is not on the Democrats' dinner plate, nor is the electorate's desire for impeachment and trial on the table, for the Democrats will be most busy preserving, protecting, and defending their presidential prospects for 2008. As therapeutic as this election may have been, the fact remains that it is the citizens who actually lead their leaders, and it is the grassroots who cause their politicians to bring about social justice and an end to wars. The recent election, however promising, will result in broken promises unless we, the people, continue our efforts to end the undeclared wars and ensure the domestic tranquility. Good luck and Godspeed. Happy days are here again. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Informed Dissent is produced by the Pacifica Foundation and community stations all over the country. This segment was produced by Robert Knight. The executive producer is Otis McClay. Technical direction by John Almella and Delise. Mushroom Cloud Theater is written by David Dozer and performed by him and Janet Coleman. Original music is produced, written, and performed by Sean Rhodes. Remember that it's listeners like you who make it possible for everyone to hear shows like this one. Please support your local community radio station during Fun Drive. For Informed Dissent, I'm Robert Knight.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a segment of Informed Dissent, Pacifica's weekly election special. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by the Pacifica Radio Network, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. You just heard this week's credits for Informed Dissent, produced by people from all over the country, just like Sprouts. I'm Otis McClay, executive producer of Informed Dissent. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Sprouts. Sprouts.
Free radio, Santa Cruz!
Radio. Music should be free. So should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides with hosts Norris and Rumford. Stay tuned. Today is Thanksgiving, Native American Genocide Day, 2006, November 23rd.
Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and I keep an old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat, and my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plant. I got a dislocated disc and a racked up back. I'm allergic to flowers and bugs. And when the bombshell hits, I get epileptic fits. And I'm addicted to 1,000 drugs. I got the weakness woes. I can't touch my toes. I can hardly reach my knees. And if the enemy came close to me, oh, I'd probably start to sneeze. I'm only 18.
got a ruptured spleen and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat and my feet are flat. My asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school and I'm a-working in a defense plant. Ooh, I hate showing lies. Hope he dies, but one thing you gotta see, that someone's gotta go over there, and that someone isn't me. So I wish you well, Sarge, give him hell, kill me 1,000 or so, and if you ever get a war without blood and gore, I'll be the first to go. Yes, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat, and my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm working in a defense plant.
And that's Phil Oakes, of course, draft Dodger rag. For all you Wrangle fans who are rooting for a new draft come Democratic Congress January. In the studio with me is Tim Rumford, Tenderfoot Tim. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, folks, or good evening, I should say.
Get it together, Tenderfoot Tim. It's Thanksgiving evening. It's gobble-gobble time. It's stuff your belly with turkey and have a gay old time, or a straight old time, or mixed old time, depending on your tastes. Anyway, this is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on 101.1 FM. It's civil rights discussions on local kind of issues and perspectives. Tim and I, of course, have been tooting the horn for a boycott of local homeless harasser and restaurateur Man 3 Srinath and his Lulu Carpenter's restaurant that took up the whole Sunday show from 9:30 to 1, and who knows how much of the next show it'll take up. But we're actually going to take up some other issues this show, specifically victories in court in Fresno, California. Mike Rhodes will be calling in at 6:30. He's a local activist who, along with others, took to the federal court there, a case which has resulted in not just a temporary restraining order, but a preliminary injunction, no less, against the practice the Fresno Police Department and its associated social service buddies have of rolling up homeless property and destroying it when the Fresno Police Department has a mind to do so. And Michael B. kind of calling in on that issue. He's spoken on this program before. You can call in at any time, hopefully, and also get your word in on this issue and other issues, local issues around civil rights for the poor, at the following number. Grab your pencils and, or else just put on your thinking caps, 427-3772. Again, 427-FRSC is the call-in number here. 427-3772. Off-air number to call, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-HUFF. HUFF is the abbreviation or acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the phone number for that is 423-HUFF-4833. And you can leave a message there, even catch a real person on occasion, and come to our very thrilling, if scantily attended, meetings at the county building. HUFF meets weekly. It's probably going to meet yearly or perhaps decadely if we get any sense in terms of the membership, but we some of the diehards like myself keep showing up. And you could also go on the HUFF website to find out the kind of issues that we talk about, mainly sort of survival civil rights-ish type issues, police misconduct. The HUFF website is huffsantacruz.org. Tim, you have your own website, however, lest I be accused of hogging the limelight or the lime mic or whatever.
Yes, it's humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com, and it mainly has to do with homeless and poverty issues as well, and also highlights my Monday night food program where I feed the homeless in front of New Leaf Market every Monday at 6 o'clock. Also, we just got a huge donation, huge, huge donation of clothes, which I'm very thankful for. So anyone who wants some clothes, I'll probably be showing up at the SAFE event on this Wednesday as well as Monday and be giving out clothes. So for all of you who need some warm clothes, show up Monday or Wednesday about 6 o'clock and I'll be there.
And how can people join your group? I guess we can meet you at 6 o'clock on Monday or 7, 6:30 or so. When do you show up on Monday?
As soon as the kiosk closes, I set up. It's generally almost exactly at 6 o'clock. The feeding is going quickly now because there's quite a few people showing up. And last time we got several other donations of food that people brought down. But still, the feeding goes very quickly, so it's about 6:15 to 7:30. And then if musicians show up and stuff, we sometimes play some music, as we did last Monday.
Yeah, I guess if you want to be a part of Food Not Bombs, you can also come to the Farmer's Market Wednesday at 4 o'clock, which is right next to the Farmer's Market in the parking lot there. Minus a porta potty, but plus a lot of instruments and so forth. That used to be the site of the last porta potty in Santa Cruz that was open to the public, passed by the Crone Crapper Commission way back in Christopher Crone's day when he was a city council member committed to putting in public bathrooms, but only able to get in 5 porta potties, all of which, at least in terms of downtown, have disappeared. But that's nonetheless where you can show up and do some. You can get in contact with Food Not Bombs. I believe they're also at 316 Main Street at the. It's not the Zombie Collective. It's the. It's another collective that serves food there. Actually, they prepare at noon with Food Not Bombs. You can check out that collective, and you can help them out if you don't make contact with them directly at the collective at 316 Main Street at noon on Wednesday. Show up at 4 o'clock on Wednesday at the Farmer's Market, yeah, which is right behind Logos Bookstore
on
Pacific Avenue.
You can probably find them online. I think I was able to do that in the past. And they've actually come in, and a couple of people who have worked with Food Not Bombs have come in and cooked and brought vegetarian meals to my feeding as well, and I very much appreciate that. Food Not Bombs was sort of what inspired me to do the Monday feeding.
Yeah, it's interesting because apparently the word is that not just Food Not Bombs used to be arrested in San Francisco regularly. They arrested over 1,000 people over a reign of terror there that extended over 3 or 4 mayors, starting with Mayor Agnos in the 80s. Through Mayor Frank Jordan, through the liberal Mayor Willie Brown, to our current Mayor Gavin Newsom there. And in Santa Cruz, there was a similar reign of arrests against people who were feeding other people, pressured by merchants to do so. And indeed, I was concerned that I saw this kind of tendency starting again when I heard that Dennis Adams' Potter's Hand meal, which was then, several years ago, feeding on Pacific Avenue sidewalk right outside. What's the yogurt place that has oxygen for sale?
I don't go in there, but it's right where the Cooper House used to be.
Yeah, I mean, they used to feed there every, I think it was every Wednesday evening. Or maybe, and then
where the big oval-shaped walk-through is.
The breezeway there, and it's... I'll remember it.
Across the street from the big theater.
Yeah, and he used to feed there, and he also used to feed in on Sunday mornings a very kind of fancy hot meal at the Loudon Nelson Center. When Loudon Nelson closed down on Sundays, he had to move to, I think he moved, negotiated to the Veterans Hall in the basement. When he moved there, he got hassled by a combination of the vets and Tim Bratton.
When I understand, and I heard lots of stories, but the last most... convincing story that I heard was that it was basically due to them wanting to rent out more space for karate classes and yoga classes and stuff like that. I guess my understanding is the city controls that building so they can use it for whatever they want. So they kicked him out. I think he tried feeding outside in the back at one point, was kicked out of there, was feeding at San Lorenzo Park for a time. And was either kicked out of there or asked to leave. I'm not sure exactly the circumstances around that. I was asked to go to a meeting where he was going to be at, and I did show up, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. I left my information there because I've been asked to speak to Dennis. I've heard that he's sort of giving up hope, and that bothers me. Dennis has done a lot of good work, especially with the veterans here. I was at a funeral of a homeless vet quite a while back that they were also serving food at that turned into a quite a quite a scene, and watching him be able to handle that scene gave me quite a respect for the man. And I think it's sad that if he's giving up hope and running into this much trouble to just simply try to feed people when he's has such a reputation of doing so.
Well,
it
I know
a
that.
Long time.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed after he was driven out of the Veterans Hall, I guess he was driven to the Veterans Hall parking lot, and then he was driven to Loudon Nelson Park, then finally he was driven out of there to.
I think it was San Lorenzo Park, but you might be right.
Right, sure. No, yeah. It was San Lorenzo Park, quite right. And also, then finally to Grant Avenue Park, where I guess you told me that you'd heard he had been told he couldn't serve without a
park. I didn't hear anything about Grand Avenue Park. I only heard about San Lorenzo where I heard that the last sort of beating occurred.
I heard he was told to go to
Grant Street.
To Grant, you know, Grand Avenue
very
Park.
Very possible.
Grant, and then I was told after that, well, I guess you were referring to San Lorenzo, who was told he had to have a permit. And so he, rather than say permits, we don't need no stinking permits, which, of course, is what Huff and Food Not Bombs and SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, the group that kind of got together and fought the city to a standstill and forced them to stop arresting people.
Yeah, I don't use permits either.
Yeah, and you apparently don't. SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which does a weekly feed on Wednesday night, along with their songs and other questionable illegal borderline activities. They're actually using public spaces without getting, you know, the official, you know, without kissing the boot of the police department, the hosts, or the city council, but using the public spaces as they were intended to be used by the people. They don't get permits either, so.
I'm actually pretty surprised that somebody who's been in this community so long, doing this kind of work for so long, is running into this many brick walls. And maybe I shouldn't be so surprised, but I am a little bit. I would figure that somebody's done that much work for so long, you know, for nothing, would get a little more respect from the city council.
Oh, well, you naive dog, you.
Yes.
What can I say? Well, I'm actually, while you were
I've been trying to find out, you know, the exact details of this, and Larry's filled me in on some stuff, and that's why I was going to that meeting. And hopefully there'll be another meeting I'll be invited to so I can find out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's too bad they didn't have more information about that. But then again, maybe you will be able to dredge up more. If anybody has any information about what's happening with Dennis Adams' food program, please give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you don't want to talk about it on air. Or, of course, you can call on air at 427-3772, and there's a chance of actually informing everybody all at once right away as to what's cooking. Huh. Well, I'm trying to find this article, which was written in Counterpunch, talking about
The Fresno suit.
The Los Angeles lawsuit. We are going to be talking about the Fresno lawsuit at 6:30. I'm going to be getting direct information on that in about 12 minutes. So maybe I'll just skip it. Here we go. It's called Sleepless on Skid Row, Guilty of Being Homeless in America. Interesting article by Gregory F. Ghani. We've talked a bit about the Jones decision and the subsequent city council, actually city attorney decision to suspend ticketing of the homeless in Skid Row in Los Angeles, and the city attorney of San Diego's decision to stop jailing homeless people for sleeping in San Diego, even though I don't know that they've stopped ticketing them, contrary to what I put out before. I think I may have misspoke myself on the air on that issue, that San Diego has adopted a don't jail the homeless approach, which may still mean arresting homeless people for failures to appear. I haven't yet gotten contact back from attorney Scott Dreyer in San Diego, who's pressing the lawsuit in San Diego. But there has been apparent movement from the city attorney of San Diego making them stop using the misdemeanor lodging law, anti-lodging law, 647J, which was used and is used statewide in some cities. It has been used in Santa Cruz. It was used in Santa Cruz against Jesus Santos about 6 or 8 months ago for camping up in the Pogonip area. It's a misdemeanor charge. In Santa Cruz, the sleeping ban is an infraction, and even a camping ticket, if you're talking about, you know, not just sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, which is the city code, and illegal, even if you have no legal shelter, as 1,500 to 2,000 people don't tonight. This beautiful Thanksgiving, stuff them with turkey and then arrest them the rest of the year approach that we have here. Anyway, we have a situation coming up where actually courts are kind of giving direction to city attorneys or to cities that are causing some consternation in conservative circles, and also hopefully we can cause some consternation in Santa Cruz, because the Federal Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, did rule in April it's cruel and unusual punishment to arrest a homeless person under the L.A. law, which admittedly is harsher than the Santa Cruz law, but not really regarding the issue of sleeping at night. It's identical, really, in that sense. And not just the city attorney of Santa Cruz, but the... the city attorney of Los Angeles didn't have to respond to this L.A. This federal court decision because the city appealed it. And so it wasn't technically binding. But he was so concerned about its causing more financial loss to the city that he ordered the police department to stop ticketing homeless people at night in the Skid Row area, even though they didn't have to. So my point has always been, if L.A. is scared of this decision, and San Diego also is scared of this decision in the sense that they're telling their homeless they're not going to jail them anymore because they're worried about the cost of false arrests and so forth in lawsuits that are already being pursued down there. There's an active lawsuit by San Diego homeless people and their attorney allies. What we need, of course, in Santa Cruz are attorney allies. And I'm happy to report that we may have some on the horizon. The National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty had an extensive, lengthy conference call with attorney Kate Wells and some homeless activists. And I was privileged to be among those who was allowed into the room. And they are looking for information to either begin a lawsuit or begin demands on the city that they stop arresting people at night when there's not adequate shelter. That's my reading of the conversation. Don't quote me as far as what the actual position of the National Law Center is at the moment, but they are seeking to get information. And indeed, attorney Kate Wells has put through a request to the Santa Cruz Police Department, a Public Records Act request, which has to be responded to in 10 days, requesting all citations in the last 6 months for sleeping, covering up with blankets, or camping.
Santa Cruz.
It's all Santa Cruz. Yeah. I'm sorry, I said San Jose. Thank you. No, Santa Cruz. No, San Jose is another kettle of fish. Huge city, huge problem.
Yeah.
But they're over the hill, man. Question is, you know, we're in our own bailiwick. What can we do? And the answer, obviously, is to get rid of our own discriminatory laws and practices. So at some point, maybe if I have time later in the show, I will get into this article, Guilty of Being Homeless in America, Sleepless on Skid Row by Gregory Afghani. You can find it on the Counterpunch website, counterpunch.org. Right now, I would encourage you to go to the indiebay.org/Central Valley website. Again, you're near a computer and you're able to do this, you want to bone up on what we're going to be talking about or read along with me, if you will, it's indiebay.org/Central Valley. We have our own indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is sort of a segment of this local, our local segment of the statewide indie media service, which I have a love-hate relationship with. I know that you, Tim set up a Santa Cruz censorship website to help people post stories that our local censors or editors, if you will not allow on indie media, or comments they will not allow because they find them objectionable for one reason or another. Reasons known only to themselves, because they never tell us what the reasons are. They delete the comments. Although I haven't seen much in the way of deletions recently. Have you? I know you've been following the Lulu Carpenter's issue. They certainly did some deletions a week ago, but has there been anything since? We wouldn't even know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, but some of the comments I've seen deleted seemed very mild, and I didn't understand the reasonings behind it at all. Some of the deletions I could see okay. You know, they took this stance. I totally disagree with the fact that they deleted the comment, but I could at least understand their reasoning. But some of the comments I just had just no reasoning of why they would delete them.
If a comment to a story you've made, a local story, or if a local story itself has been deleted from indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, please go to santacruzcensorship.blogspot.com, santacruzcensorship.blogspot.com, and post the story, or at least post, if you haven't got the story, the comment that you put it up on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and it got deleted.
Yeah. Save your comments, folks.
And save your comments. But let's turn to the city of Fresno and the rather substantial victory that happened on Monday. Here's a story by Mike Rhodes, who's going to be calling in shortly. City of Fresno ordered to uphold U.S. Constitution. The city of Fresno was ordered on Wednesday, November 22nd, yesterday, to stop taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property. United States District Judge Oliver Wanger, Wanger?
It is.
It is.
Reading an article here from
the
Sentinel.
That might be Wagner, but Wanger
Judge
it is.
Oliver W. Wagner.
Wanger. Citing the 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendment to the Constitution. That's searches and seizures, due process, and I guess the due process is applied to the states, not just to the federal Constitution, but as applied to each of the states. Issued a preliminary injunction against the city. Wanger said, people cannot be punished because of their circumstances. They can't be deprived of their constitutional rights. Well, that's a new one on me, but I'm glad to hear it. Throughout the hearing, the policy of the city of Fresno was described by police officers, city workers, and the city manager. They said it was their policy to notify residents of homeless encampments that a cleanup, quote-unquote, is going to take place. They would notify residents of the encampment both in writing and orally. The position of the city was that if they notified homeless encampment residents of the date and time of the cleanup, then they could come in with bulldozers and a garbage truck, declare everything in the area that remained as trash, and destroy it. City workers claimed that they would never destroy property if it was in someone's possession. In the last day of the hearing, it was revealed that this policy was the creation of Fresno police officer Ray Wallace. He described the policy as an out-of-the-box creative solution to the problem created by homelessness in this community. Homeless people, in their testimony before the court, said they had not received notice of impending police sweeps and that their possessions are not trash. They described losing medicine, clothing, and other irreplaceable items. One person had an urn with her granddaughter's ashes inside, destroyed by a police raid. This happened as the person begged city workers not to destroy her property. After 4 days of hearings, Wanger determined that the law provides for the homeless to have their property rights protected. The preliminary injunction will be in place until a lawsuit on this issue is resolved by the court. A conference to set up a court date for the lawsuit will be held in February 2007. The Fresno Bee reported today that the City Hall leaders plan to appeal the ruling to issue a preliminary injunction to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the article on that, there's a story in the Fresno Bee. Fresno's homeless win round in court. Judge Mayer trade tough talk over city's property seizures. A federal judge Wednesday blasted Fresno for destroying personal property when it clears away homeless encampments and ordered a halt to the practice. U.S. District Judge Oliver W. Wanger said the city's policy of immediately destroying the belongings of homeless people during sweeps, if they're not present to claim them, violates their constitutional rights. He called it dishonest, quote, and intentionally disparaging, quote unquote. Wanger also didn't buy the city's argument that storing items for owners to claim later is impractical and expensive. That is, I'll be charitable, disingenuous, Wanger said. Later in the day, defiant City Hall leaders said that they would appeal the ruling to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals if the City Council agrees. Let's have our bigoted policy. They can't take away our bigoted policy.
That's some interesting quotes from both these gentlemen, also in the Sentinel article as well.
You want to read that? This is Sure. You're reading the AP article in today's Sentinel?
Yeah, this is the Judge Wagner saying, persons cannot be punished because of their status, Wagner said Wednesday. said Wednesday before issuing his ruling. They cannot be denied their constitutional rights because of their appearance, because of their impoverishment, because of their squatters, because, in effect, they are voiceless. Whether they squat in cities, parks, or sleeps in makeshift dwellings next to train tracks, homeless people in Fresno live in fear that their things, many critical to their survival, will be destroyed without warning. It goes on, and then on the opposite side, the prosecutor for the DA says, when they end up on the street, they still have their family. Excuse me, got to skip ahead here. So the attorney for the other side said they will be destroyed without warning, and he's speaking of their property, who argued against the case for the U.S. ACLU. City officials throughout the hearing described homeless encampment as safety hazards, a nuisance, and hotbed of crime. We see evidence of drug use. We see human feces. We see other materials that would be concerned about. Fresno rule defines abandonment property as dishonest and demeaning to homeless people.
Demeaning, yeah.
Demeaning, because it categorized their property as abandoned simply because it is on the street. City workers took people's belongings without notice and did not give property owners an opportunity to claim their goods.
So this is a federal court, folks. This is a federal court ruling. It's time to stop the bulldozing of homeless settlements unless you're prepared to catalog the property that you're going to essentially take away from homeless people or attempt to destroy or claim as somehow illegal or as evidence of a crime or whatever you're claiming. And actually, of course, what's being done here is the same kind of brute mob mentality.
Yeah,
it's a kind of disrespect and disregard for basic people's rights that you saw with Okies in California or homeless people in Santa Cruz, as happens in numerous homeless encampments here. And indeed, there actually are a couple of interviews I did today at the Veterans Hall. There was a long line of folks at the Veterans Hall getting food in the twice a year fancy turkey meal. Fancy isn't perhaps the word, but very plenteous turkey meal. We may be hearing that soon. But it looks like we have a call from, I think that's the Fresno line. Let's see what we got here. Hi, I hope you're on free radio.
Well, this is Mike Rhodes. I hope I am, too.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Try to talk more loudly if you can.
Okay, how's that?
That's okay, although I think we're probably much louder than you are, and hopefully that's...
Let me try another phone. Hold on.
All right, hang on. He's looking for another.
Is this any better?
That is better, definitely.
Okay, we'll go with that then.
Wow, very good. So, Mike, I was just reading both the AP story, the Fresno Bee story, and the Mike Rhodes story on the recent court decision by, is it Wanger? Is that his name?
Yeah, Wanger, Judge Oliver Wanger.
Judge Wanger, essentially saying, you can make these folks not sleep at night. You can arrest them on spurious grounds, but... at least catalog their property. That's kind of is that what the decision's about?
Well, actually, I'm a little more hopeful than that. That it has more significance than that. What we've got going on here is that the Fresno Police Department have implemented a policy whereby they tell people that they're going to come and clean up an area. And then they come by and they say that they verbally warn them. They leave a notice first, and then they come by and verbally warn them. And then they bring in the bulldozers and the garbage trucks and dismantle homeless people's encampments. And they thought, for some reason, that they had some fig leaf of legality to that. And that's what this court battle was about, was to... say no, just because somebody's homeless and or they're poor, that they have the same civil liberties and the same rights under the Constitution as everybody else does.
Well, I was actually when I reached the point in this article, let's see, where was I? I was at this point where, just a moment here. You've got some nice links in the article. I know you've been covering this day by day, this court case.
Yeah, I was the only reporter that was there for the entire length of the trial, or the hearing. So if you're really interested in this issue, you could read my story, which is sort of a blow by blow account of what happened.
And I actually read that story.
Cool.
I read days three and then half of day two and half of day one, and I never got to day three on the last show, obviously because day three hadn't happened when you, on Sunday, but also I didn't really finish the whole thing. You wrote a very very detailed account, and we're taking all our time here dealing with local bigoted merchants in downtown Santa Cruz, but I think your decision is very important. If we could get a federal court to look in on Santa Cruz, I think it would put the fear of the mighty into these mighty, fearful people here who run the city. So has there, in fact, been a cessation of sweeps in Fresno?
Well, that's a good question, Robert. You know, I want to say yes, absolutely, there has been. And, in fact, the city of Fresno and the Fresno Police Department have not done any of these sweeps since we got a temporary restraining order against them about a month ago. But what happened was that we started getting reports that the railroads were conducting sweeps along their property that they claim by the railroads.
Uh-huh.
And there were homeless encampments near the railroad tracks. And one morning about a week and a half ago, folks woke up and there was all this dust in the air, and they looked out their tent, and there was a bulldozer facing them. And the bulldozer, the operator said they had a couple minutes to get their things and get out of there, and they were going to destroy the encampment. They asked the guy who he's with, and he wouldn't. He said, "I work for my boss." And they said, "Well, who's your boss?" And the guy goes, "I don't know." We really don't know who this was. I gave a number of the homeless people in that area cameras to photograph people if this happened again, and other people had been threatened. this guy who was from the railroad came and threatened some folks, and he got his camera out to take a picture of him because I wanted to, you know who was making these threats. And the guy said, "If you take my picture, I'm going to arrest you right now." So, so the bottom line is we
did
don't
you,
know.
Did you take his picture?
No, he didn't. He didn't want to go to jail.
Oh, I see. So he was. I see. But if you'd showed up in a nice pair of sneakers, and he said that to you, what do you think your response would have been?
I had to take his picture, of course.
Invited him to speak on the subject as he was putting you in handcuffs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the problem here is that these people just have a sense of entitlement that they can write these laws, and they become the law of the land. Well, that was in part the significance of this ruling by Judge Wenger yesterday, is that the police simply came up with a policy. In fact, it was one specific officer, it was Ray Wallace, who came up with a policy on how to deal with homeless people. He considered himself to be empowered to come up with a policy that would take and immediately destroy people's property. And as he said, excuse me, I got a little bit of a cold here. As he put it, he came up with an out-of-the-box solution for a difficult problem. And the judge ruled that, you know, you can't, even if you're a police officer or, you know, a city official, we have the city manager on the stand, even if you are a police officer or a city manager, you still don't have the right to violate the Constitution of the United States.
That's true. Only the President and the Congress have that right, and they're making good use of it, actually.
Can I ask
I think that's the important thing of the hearing here yesterday, is it held these people accountable. They thought that they would never be held accountable for this because poor people here, homeless people in this community, don't have any power. They don't have friends in high places. They don't have money to contribute to people's city council campaigns. But what they found out is that they do have some support, and they do have some power.
It's just nobody has clued in Caltrans yet, huh?
Well, Caltrans is kind of an interesting entity in all this, in that it was their land that was being cleared. The city asserted time and again that they were operating because they'd received complaints from property owners. And we said, okay, you know, show us the complaint that Caltrans filed with you. And they never could produce anything. So we really think that this was a policy of the Fresno Police Department carried out by overzealous officers, and they directed the city sanitation department to come in and clear up an area. What they basically did is they would say anything that was left over, that was left after they had given due warning to these people by written notice and oral notice, anything that was left after that was what they called debris.
But I read in your article that they only presented evidence of one such notification.
Yeah, that was true.
Out of many sweeps, right?
And that one notification that they presented as evidence that they notified homeless people of these sweeps had the wrong date listed on it.
Well, maybe they destroyed all the evidence in an attempt to clean up the office. I mean, they, you know, they're trying to be what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. You know, let's throw away all our own stuff, too. But, I mean, what about this Caltran thing? Does that mean that you got to take the American Civil Liberties Union, the attorneys you who came down to help you, and I guess there's, what is it called, the third organization that's working with you?
There's the ACLU. There's
National Law Center.
There's a private law firm that's involved.
Right, and then there's a third group.
Lawyers for Civil Rights. Something like that.
Yeah, central, I don't know. There were three organizations.
Yeah.
Well, I'll look up your story in a moment. Are they going to have to go and seek a second injunction from Wenger to stop Caltran if Caltran is doing this? Or what's your next step on this? Or is this something you think was a fluke, this raid?
Oh, no. This is clearly city policy. They've done it. They've conducted these raids, as Officer Wallace said, probably 50 times over the last year and a half. So this is a very well-established...
Right, but you say that once the federal court told them to stop, then suddenly another agency came in and did it?
Yeah, well, actually, it's not Caltrans that's doing it. It's these railroad companies.
Is it considered private property?
That's what they're saying. They posted signs on the railroad property, and they're saying that if people are there, that they can come and arrest them. Now, there's some power of arrest that railroad companies have that I don't really understand, but I understand that to be true. And
it goes back to the hobo days, right?
Well, it seems to me that even if you're arresting someone for trespass, you can't destroy their property. Did they seize property or did they destroy it in this latest extra-legal raid?
They seized it and immediately destroyed it. The bulldozer clamped down on the tent and all the possessions inside, put it in a 20-foot-long dumpster, and then proceeded to fill that dumpster up with a bunch of rocks that were in the area, you know, kind of asphalt-like rocks,
uh-huh,
and completely buried these people's possessions underneath of it.
Was there some reason to put the asphalt rocks in other than to frustrate and make unusable the homeless possessions and make them inaccessible?
Yeah, well, you know, usually what they do, this is a little different procedure than what they've done in the past. When the city cleans up, they come in with a bulldozer, and the bulldozer has a big scoop on it, and then they grab up what they can with that scoop and put it right in the back of the garbage truck. And then the garbage truck has one of these big compactors that smashes everything in. I think the judge was particularly moved. My daughter videotaped some of the raid on June 22nd, and she caught a incident where they compacted a bicycle. They picked up a perfectly good bicycle, and they tossed it into the back of a garbage truck and just crushed it. And the judge was just like, you know, visibly shaken when he saw that. That it's like, what do you think you're doing? What do you think gives you the right to destroy people's property? It came out that the city clearly has a policy for dealing with abandoned property. For example, if I were to leave my car on the side of the road and for some reason they thought it was abandoned, they wouldn't come out with a compacting machine and destroy it. They have a procedure for that where they tow it away and store it for so many days, and they deal with it. Same thing with a bicycle. They find a bicycle that's abandoned or stolen. They have a process. They have a written procedure for how to deal with that. What they did here is they developed a completely parallel policy for dealing with homeless people's property. And that's what the judge just was like, really could not understand how they thought that they could come up with a law that it is in violation of the 4th, 5th, 14th Amendment and the California Constitution.
We're talking with Mike Rhodes of Fresno, California, in a decision that is titled what? What's the name of this court decision?
Wow, it's just a preliminary injunction.
Right, but isn't there a case specifically involved?
Well, it's the city of Fresno versus Kincaid and all.
We'll call it the Kincaid decision for short, perhaps?
Sure. She's the lead plaintiff in this.
You know, I got a couple things I want to say, but Tim here has been his usual patient, quiet self. In the studio with me is Tim Rumford, or Tenderfoot Tim, who probably knows more homeless people than most of us have ever imagined. Tim, you got a question for Mike here?
Yeah, I was just curious about this Judge Wagner. Wagner. Has he come forward? He seems pretty ballsy from some of the quotes I've read. And has he come before to the homeless population and helped them in any other matters before? Has he come and helped, you know, in these matters in any other way in the past? Or is this the first time that he's come forward?
People that I know that know of him say he's a Republican, he's conservative,
really,
but he's fair.
Yeah.
We've never seen him before. After this decision came out yesterday, I did a little research on him on the internet and found that he was the judge in a federal case in Fresno a couple of years ago where the assassin of Archbishop Romero was tried in absentia here and found guilty. He was the judge in that case.
Archbishop Romero, of course, was the El Salvadoran bishop who was assassinated, possibly with CIA and U.S. government involvement, in 1980, right? Or 1979, thereabouts?
It's about 80, yeah.
And I guess that, so is it, whatever happened to his assassin, to ask a totally irrelevant question?
No, it's actually kind of curious because the guy ended up living in Merced or Modesto, someplace here in the Central Valley, and that's why this case ended up in federal court in Fresno, California, because the assassin had then immigrated to the United States and settled in the Central Valley, and so the case was held here, and it was really interesting that with all these people, I attended some of those hearings. They had people from all over the world testifying in this case.
What was the outcome?
They found him guilty, but in absentia because he had escaped somewhere else since they had tracked him down here, and this was his last known address.
A traveling man.
Yeah, well, so anyway, that was sort of an interesting sidelight. And then when the judge left the courtroom after the trial, we were standing down outside the federal courtroom, talking to the media, and about 45 minutes later, so the judge comes down, and all the homeless people that were there said, "Thank you, Judge, thank you," and waved at him, and he turned around, smiled, and waved back. But that's about the extent of their contact with him.
You know, I had some thoughts. I know when you brought this issue up, that in spite of the judges, I guess prior to this hearing, which I guess the decision was on Wednesday, yesterday?
Yes, that's correct.
Prior to this hearing, there was a temporary restraining order in place, right?
Yes, that's true.
And yet, in spite of the temporary restraining order, some authority, possibly a state authority, possibly what, renegade police officers, I don't know, possibly disgruntled associates of former assassin of Archbishop Romero, you know, wearing sanitation uniforms. I mean, I don't know who did this cleanup on the railroad property after a federal judge had said some weeks ago, was it in October, lay off the homeless. And if you're gonna, you know, tell them to leave because of a trespass complaint, or you're going to claim they're violating some city code. You have to, if you're going to take their property, you have to, you can't destroy it. You have to catalog it and hold it. Who would violate that? I mean, who were these people? You still don't know.
Well, that's the thing is we don't know.
It's only happened once. So.
Well, it happened once, and then these people moved to another location. A city worker in a city truck stopped by and told them that they would have to move from where they had moved to because they were too close to the railroad and that they would be arrested if they didn't move by Monday. This was a week or so ago. So that's when I connected with them and gave them cameras, and we never really found out. And then,
to kind of carry out that, so we get the chronology clear, after they came down to threaten them a second time, and they attempted to photograph, they were told they'd be arrested if they took pictures.
Right.
Criminal shutterbugging, that sort of
right,
thing.
Right, right, uh-huh. Right. Yep. So then they just moved like 50 feet away, and as far as I know, they're there now.
So there have been three separate incidents involving not so much the confiscation. On one occasion, their property was confiscated, and
right.
On two other occasions, they were threatened with arrest, which I suppose,
right.
It doesn't violate the court order. You know, my first thought was that you need to get federal marshals out there to enforce the court order.
Mm-hmm.
I want to carry this a little further. You know, we talked about how it's only the president and the Congress that really have the right to suspend the Constitution as they did as of October 17th when they passed
that at the local level.
Right. Well, I suppose you could. And effectively for poor people, it's done all the time.
Right.
But in practice, if you're actually going to do so explicitly, the Military Commissions Act is where you got to go, which was passed on October 17th, or the Insurrection Act amendments, which essentially allow the president to nationalize the National Guard more easily, in spite of the objections of governors, suspend habeas corpus. So maybe what we need to do is declare these individuals who are seizing and destroying homeless property terrorists, get the president to designate them as enemy combatants, and simply form our own military commissions and try them. What do you think?
Well, that's one way to approach it.
Yes.
I'll tell you, there's one other instance, too, where this people who were by the railroad tracks were threatened. This was about a week ago, the police, this was about 10, 12 police officers, and the railroad company came through a large area where there's probably 30 or 40 people living near a railroad track, and threatened them with arrest. And the next day, I saw Captain Garner, who's the Fresno Police Department captain for that part of town, and I asked him if they were in fact using the railroads as a proxy to go around the temporary restraining order. And he didn't, he just sort of smirked at me at the time. This was at a press conference. And then the first day of court this week, as I came in, he confronted me. And he comes up to me and he says, "Proxy, Mike? Proxy? You think we're using the railroads as a proxy?" And I said, "I don't know. Are you?" That's the question.
Like he went home and got his dictionary out, it sounds like.
Yeah. And he said, "If you think that, that is what we're doing, Mike. We're going to have problems working together." And I said, "Well, just answer the question. I mean, that's all I'm asking you to do."
And what was his answer?
He said he didn't. He was not using them as a proxy. In fact, this came up at Monday morning after the break. There was a big meeting in the judge's chambers over that very issue. What is the role of the Fresno Police Department in these cleanups that are continuing to take place?
And there
is... we had pictures. I had pictures of the police all over the railroad yards that day because I'd given folks cameras, little disposable cameras, and they were out there taking pictures of them with the railroad company, and that's when they were being threatened with arrest. And so we tied the police to the railroad company. And that's why, obviously, that's why Garner was all pissed at me, is because there was some truth to it.
Was this the second, was this the post-TRO
yes.
illegal? Now, And in that case, not only did they move people off the property with trespass arrests and threats, but they destroyed property in violation of the injunction.
That was the concern, yes.
Tim?
Well, I was just going to say, I know there's some special laws regarding camping and sleeping next to railroad tracks, and I don't know those specific laws, but because of health and safety and blah, 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 because they're camping next to a fast-moving object, that there are other laws that they could use against the homeless, I assume. And those laws go way back, and I'm not sure of their details. Have you guys looked into any of that? Or?
Well, it's not an area that we've been able to focus on at this point. I will tell you, though, that some of the guys I've talked to that live there said they've been living there for 3 years. There's an encampment there. They go, we know the railroad people. They come by all the time. They're, you know, every week they're by. They say hi. We're friends. They've never told us to leave. The week after the TRO came out, they put up signs saying no trespassing. And then another week went by, and they came out and threatened them with arrest if they didn't leave. And I sort of laid that chronology out to Greg Garner and said, you tell me, is this just a coincidence?
Yeah, I guess what my confusion is in this whole lawsuit is how it will affect private property, and people are camping on private property.
Mm-hmm. I would think it won't affect, you know, laws against camping or trespass. It'll affect attempts to destroy property when you're doing that. I mean, I think that Fresno people, homeless people, if they could get together, and I don't know if they're so inclined, I mean, but they could get, they can do the Portland response, which is when Dignity Village was declared a persona non grata, that was the homeless encampment up in Portland, Oregon, that they had to move. They just did a shopping cart parade all through town, all around the place. They moved to another site.
Uh-huh.
And as long as their property can't be seized, then they can move. I mean, then they can make it a big deal until they are finally given a legal site to be.
So who provided the space for Dignity Village?
Well, and eventually what happened was they got the city of Portland to allow them to a site. It was sort of off in the boonies. But they went from one public area, one public park to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were originally funded and organized out of Street Roots, the homeless newspaper in Portland, Oregon. And their activity was based to some extent on the Wicks decision, which was a court decision in 2000 that found that the entire camping ordinance, as applied to a father and son, Wicks and his son, was unconstitutional. It was a local judge found that. And so the law had been thrown out. They couldn't use the camping law against the homeless in Portland, Oregon. Now, of course, they used everything else, as you know, as they're probably doing, as they do in Los Angeles now that the sleeping ban has been suspended at night in Skid Row. But, you know, they still, it put them in a difficult position and empowered folks. Plus, of course, the fact that, you know, the obvious necessity empowerment of having to sleep somewhere at night, regardless of what Mr. Lawbook Man or Mr. Gunman over there says, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're talking with Mike Rhodes, who's a writer, activist, troublemaker, gadfly, camera guy, and who knows what else in Fresno, California. He's written extensively on the issue of this recent court decision, federal court decision by Ninth Circuit Judge Wanger, which has found that you can't throw out even the property of those scummy, dirty, nasty homeless people. Even those human beings still have, theoretically, until they're declared enemy combatants, some rights. After they're declared enemy combatants, of course, they can, of course, be whisked away to any number of and given some unusual, extraordinary interrogation methods, which probably happens anyway in Fresno, doesn't it? What's the situation about that? Let me just kind of skip to a somewhat different topic, Mike. You know, there's a concern about tasering here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, tasering deaths. You've seen the thing about the UCLA tasering video of the...
I saw that.
Yeah, I guess it was a... What?
He's a senior. He's from Iran.
He was an old guy.
An Iranian senior, who was tasered because he didn't pull out his ID in the library or some bullshit or like that. So, I mean, you know, I'm wondering, here in Santa Cruz, we have, you know, people who've complained, people have been tasered here. One man was tasered to death in a jail cell a year ago.
A woman, I think.
Well, this was a man, but there may have been a woman, too. I think there was another death. But, I mean, that was a specific death. So what's happening in Fresno around that, and is Is torture a problem in Fresno by police vis-a-vis homeless people? I mean, of course, sleep deprivation is torture, and destroying, you know, your granddaughter's ashes in an urn is
your
a form
medicine.
Of, your medicine is a form of torture. But I'm talking about, you know, the more creative Gonzales-Ocade tortures, you know, waterboarding. I don't know. I guess they don't have sexual tortures, or do they, in Fresno?
That's our next story we're going to have to follow. We actually have a number of jailhouse writers that are writing for the Community Alliance. That's my main occupation, is the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper in Fresno.
Community Alliance newspaper?
Monthly newspaper here in Fresno. We have people, you know, the Central Valley just has, the growth industry here is prisons. There are prisons everywhere in the Central Valley. We have the world's largest women for prison, prison for women, just north of us in Chowchilla. There's thousands and thousands of women in there, and we have some people writing for us, and they have some very interesting articles about the horrendous conditions that people live in. Boston Woodard is one of our writers, and he was talking about how people are stacked three high in the bunks in the jail that he's in. The jail's hideously overcrowded here. The police here, and I know this is a little off the topic, but I think it's relevant, is that a lot of times people don't even get to the jail. They're killed on site. There are so many people who get killed by the police that it's a scandal here that people are probably not aware of. You mentioned the stun guns, the electric
tasers,
and there was a man killed in Madera here, where he had been put in the back of a patrol car, and he was handcuffed. His hands were cuffed behind his back, and he was kicking the door or the window or something to get out. He was angry. Officer opened the door, said she meant to draw her taser. Instead, she drew her revolver and shot him through the heart. Killed him on the spot.
Well, perhaps she was trying to prove that she wasn't the only heartless person in the area.
Well,
yes.
That's one way to do it.
I guess.
There was a 92-year-old woman who was shot by the police when they accidentally raided the wrong house yesterday in Atlanta.
I saw that. This is endemic here. In Fresno, they do this sort of thing all the time. And every time that it happens, the police are always found to be in the right. It's just like, you know what the outcome of the internal affairs investigation is going to be before it's over, because it's always the same.
Now, we have a similar situation here, of course, the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or Review Board, as I used to, it actually did have some limited effect, a minor deterrent effect.
Powers they didn't use.
Before it was eliminated in 2003 by the progressive Ed Porter and Mike Rodkin and Emily Riley, all the wonderful people in our city council. You don't have a police review board there, I guess, huh?
Well, no. I mean, that's something that people are, like, struggling to get, is to have an independent police auditor or a review board.
Well, auditors are kind of useless. In police review boards, even in Berkeley, I mean, where they have the strongest police review board in the nation, might be Minnesota or something, but
mm-hmm.
Berkeley was the strongest for a while, and, you know, it had some impact. The thing that really is most effective in dealing with the police department is effective lawsuits, really. I mean, like what you're doing now.
Well, this has got their attention, believe me. They have noticed that this is an issue, and they're going to have to deal with it, because we have a federal order, a preliminary injunction on them. And, I mean, where all this is going is to there's a lawsuit against the city of Fresno for the violation of homeless people's civil liberties. And we want compensation for the lost value of people's property. We aim this to be a class action suit so that it would affect all homeless people in this area. First, we want to stop them from doing these things in the community. And then second, we want to compensate people for the losses they've suffered.
That was one of my questions I was going to ask.
Yeah, I guess my concern is it doesn't seem to have had an impact on at least this this most recent raid that happened, a week ago or something?
Well, yeah, but don't be too sure about that because they have, you know, I haven't heard of anything in about a week. There was this meeting in the judge's chambers. Garner went ballistic on me. All these are good signs that they're paying attention and that they know that we're watching. They know we've got cameras out there everywhere. They can't get away with squat.
So are you, you know, financially independent? So you can pass out cameras like pancakes, or is
that's it.
What is your source of financing anyway, as they always shouted at me? You know, where do you get your money from? You know, why? How can you? You know, come clean here. Let's talk about the real issue. What about you and your political agenda? What about that, Rhodes?
Yeah. Well, you know, you should look at our finances to see how, you know, we used to get all of our money in gold from Russia, and, you know, that spigot's been cut off, so now
you get it all from Iran, probably.
We were trying to get some from there, and we're talking to Hugo in Venezuela.
Yeah, I was going to say, Venezuela's giving out money.
No, we're just a complete shoestring operation, and, you know, how I finance that, just totally, honestly, it's, these cameras cost, I'll buy three or four at a time and develop the film from people when I get them back from folks who've taken pictures. And I'll go to friend A and I'll say, hey, Jim, you know, this is what I did, and can you pay for this round of cameras? And everybody that I've asked has just come forward with supporting the project. I haven't had anybody say no because they know the value of it.
You know, that's sort of how my food programs come along, and it works.
Yes, it does, because, frankly, without having these cameras out there, we wouldn't have evidence that we do to slow them down.
So is there a website that folks can go to see some of these videos and pictures and documentation? And
well, the best place I could direct you to is the Central Valley site of
Indie Bay.
Indie Media. And if you go there, you'll see some of the stories, and then there's lots of links to earlier stories from there. And I've got to just say it again, that my daughter's video of this, we have a little, you know, inexpensive digital video camera that she went out with me, and she filmed this these incidences of the police directing the sanitation workers to throw full shopping carts full of people's possessions into the garbage truck and having them crushed, had an enormous impact on the judge and in the hearings. Because if it wasn't for that, and as several of the attorneys said afterwards, if we didn't have that photographic and video evidence of this, it would simply be a he said, she said sort of story, because the judge couldn't see for himself that there were, in fact, valuable possessions there that were being destroyed. That picture of the sanitation worker picking up this perfectly good, fully functioning bicycle and throwing it into the back of a garbage truck and hearing the crushing sound of it being destroyed, I think that was a tipping point in the hearing.
Is that video available online?
That section of it is not. There's another one that is, that's similar to that, as they're throwing one shopping cart after another into the garbage truck. And you could hear in the background, you could hear the operator saying, I wish I had a nickel for every shopping cart I destroyed. You know, just so disrespectful of these people's possessions.
Well, I've got lots of server space, and any videos could get a hold of, I'd love to put up.
Send me a link, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, I'll get the information through Robert.
Sounds good.
You know, I mean, also, you've talked in the past, or at least I've read in your articles, that poverty pimps, so-called social service providers like Poverello House, have been instrumental in colluding with the police in this kind of brutal, abusive violation of human rights at a local level, condoned
apparently at the highest levels of your city by the mayor and city council. I take it the mayor and city council didn't schedule an emergency session to immediately discipline the police department or fire the city manager or, you know.
No, they're trying
nothing
to,
like that. Huh?
They're talking about appealing the judge's decision.
Right, they're blaming the judge for essentially shining the light as the rats scurry about wondering what to do next.
Right, well, that's, you know, they had me on the stand, too, there the other day, and, I was like, well, I don't know what they're going to throw at me, but it'll be interesting. So their main argument against me is that I have an opinion, and therefore...
You're prejudiced.
Yeah, I'm prejudiced, you know. He's not like all the other corporate media. He's prejudiced. The worst thing that they could say about me is that I give the homeless and poor a voice in our publication. And, you know, he would read opinions that I'd written about how the city of Fresno is not trying to end homelessness. They're trying to eliminate the homeless. And he would think,
how could you say such a thing about the city of Fresno?
That's what he said. You know, it's like, you know, he is not he's not unbiased. And the homeless people in the back were cheering. You know, when
what about the corporate media? I mean, the Fresno Bee, of course, immediately took your side, right?
Oh yeah, they had the headline on their article over the summer when they were doing these sweeps was something like "City of Fresno." Cleans a haven for the homeless.
I know that.
You know, and they simply talk to the police and city officials, get their version of it, and they didn't even see, they had no issue with people's property being destroyed.
How about leftist groups and local, you know, progressive organizations? You have a large Latino population there?
There is, absolutely. There's probably 40% of the community is
and
Latino.
What percentage of the homeless population is Latino?
30-40%. It's pretty representative of the community. But the African American...
is even larger?
Yeah, it's probably 30-40% too. And then there's...
Any organizations like the NAACP way in down there? Or
they're not around. You know who is, though, is there's this guy, Reverend Floyd Harris, who works with the National Action Network.
Who's he?
The National Action Network is affiliated with Reverend Al Sharpton in New York.
Uh-huh.
So Reverend Harris, Brother Harris, is really cool. He came out there with a crew of people sometime during the summer and did a cleanup of the homeless encampments that was...
It didn't involve destroying all the property?
It did not involve destroying anybody's property.
Amazing.
It was entirely respectful. He came out, he met with people beforehand, sat down in their tents with them, talked about what was going on, and then brought a crew of folks out, passed out brooms and, you know, weed equipment, and everybody worked together and cleaned it up, and it was beautiful.
So they've already been shown a way that they can do this effectively.
They know it can be done. They'd rather spend tens of thousands of dollars on ineffective attorneys to try to violate our constitutional rights.
Well, they want to scare you guys away. I mean, they want to you're not homeless yourself, I take it, but they want to scare away homeless people, and the way to do it is by suggesting that they're so brutal that they can destroy possessions casually. Look what we get. If you don't leave, we may do the same to you, right?
I think they've made it clear that they don't have any use for homeless people. They don't put any resources into... I mean, there are thousands of homeless people on the streets in Fresno, you know, that are not getting any community services at all. All they get is attacked by the city of Fresno, and the city of Fresno will put their money into the police and attacking them. In fact, that was one other interesting thing that came out of this trial is that our attorney showed where the city of Fresno was taking money that was originally intended to address homelessness issues and funneling that into the Fresno Police Department and code enforcement. So the money is there to provide the services, even, you know, to provide if they were going to clean up and store property, if there were things that were left that were people's property, that the money, the city, of course, complained that they had no money to do that. But we showed that the money is there through the CDBG, Community Development Block Grant money, that is not being used for the purposes it's intended.
What's the opinion? This is perhaps most important. I've always felt that in Santa Cruz there is a conscience in the community which really ultimately bridles at the idea of arresting people after 11 o'clock at night for sleeping when there's no legal place for people to sleep. That it's just simply unconscionable, and that at some level most people, would, when they hear about this, will oppose it, and some even viscerally by coming out to engage in civil disobedience.
Right.
In Fresno, what's the feeling about homeless people? Are they just considered so much unwanted trash by a majority of the community? Is there a lot, just a lot of apathy? Are people afraid? What kind of support do you have among the community for what you're trying to do in this lawsuit?
Well, that's a very good question. And to answer it, there's probably it would require a rather lengthy explanation. Let me say that the homeless have not been given a lot of opportunity to speak for themselves here and to talk about the issues that they face. Certainly the corporate media doesn't do any of that. Our paper has been covering it rather extensively. The feedback I get is very positive, that people are very appreciative of the information. They are understanding the issue better, but it's something that people are still learning about. I think to most people, the homeless are largely invisible, and that they don't know that much about it. And then you also have the city's strategy of they have had a public relations campaign that they have invested in to get people not to give homeless people money or food. Their argument is that you do more harm than good. You know, you may be, you know.
I don't want to hear their argument.
Okay.
Go ahead. Tell me more.
Well, you know, what you would expect. You know, their argument is that
I don't want to hear their argument. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear their argument, Mike. I want to hear, given their argument, we've had similar bullshit here.
Right.
We call it, I don't know, a hand up, not a handout, or, you know, we call it throwing little paper cards at the homeless with useless information rather than you know, a spare change they might actually use
yeah.
to buy toiletries or buy a cup of coffee they can sit up all night to avoid the sleeping ban, that sort of thing.
City's position is that you should give your money to the Poverello House and the Rescue Mission because they are the ones who
right.
can deal with this problem.
That's the grim yeah. side of it. What about the other side? I asked you about Latino. What kind of support do you have from Spanish-speaking civil rights organizations? Is there a, you know, I mean, I know we had literally hundreds of thousands of people mm-hmm. on the streets statewide on May 1st, you know, when we were
mm-hmm.
opposing the immigration laws. And then, strangely enough, on October 17th,
mm-hmm.
when this new law was passed, the Military Commissions Act, that allows any immigrant, any non-citizen to be denied writ of habeas corpus, held without trial, held without an attorney, and tortured. And then
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I believe that we are back on the air. We were having some technical difficulties here in the studio. It appears that our DSL went down momentarily, and there were people here working on it, and managed to get it all fixed. So we are a station heavily involved in technology, and sometimes it lets us down. Anyway, first of all, I want to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving, and hope you're all enjoying yourself. Most of you are probably well stuffed at this point, and some of you are probably regretting you ate so much. But today is the day to give Thanksgiving, and let's all give Thanksgiving for the fact that we're all still here. Normally on Thursday evenings I do a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. That is not going to happen tonight. I will be loading up the computer and then leaving the station to go spend more time with my family, because that's what you're all doing. So there will be no Earth First update tonight, and there will be no mystery group. Listener call-in contest at 10 o'clock. Don't know if DJ Soup is coming in at 11. Have no way of knowing. But if he does, fine. You can listen to In the Mix, Free Radio's responsible progressive hip-hop show here on Thursday nights. We are, however, going to play music for the next 3 hours, so stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Enjoy your evening, and you know, do what you need to do to get on with what you need to get on with. And let's start off with some Led Zeppelin.